Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters Today. I'm your host, Bob McChesson, here in WILL AM 580, coming to you from Campbell Hall in beautiful Urbana, Illinois. We've got a live show for you today, this wonderful summer's afternoon. And we're going to be joined by one of the legendary figures of modern alternative or independent journalism. Joining us today will be Amy Goodman, the executive producer and host of Democracy Now!, a figure known to many of my listeners who've wanted her on the show for a long time. So join us today on Media Matters with Amy Goodman. But first, let's go to the news from NPR.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall. Hamas and Islamic Jihad today declared they're suspending attacks against Israel for 3 months. There was no announcement by Yasser Arafat's Fatah movement. NPR's Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem has more.
Hamas leader Abdelaziz Rantisi, who was the target of a failed Israeli assassination attempt earlier this month, said Hamas and Islamic Jihad suspended military operations against what he called the Zionist enemy, on the condition that Israel cease all operations against them and lift blockades on Palestinian areas. Rantisi said the deal was off if Israel does not fulfill the conditions. Palestinian Foreign Minister Nabil Shaath said that even though Fatah did not sign the agreement, it remains committed to a truce. He said there was wrangling within Fatah over the final wording of the ceasefire. The Al-Aqsa Martyr Brigades, a militant offshoot of Fatah, says it will not respect the ceasefire. Linda Gradstein, NPR News, Jerusalem.
Paul Bremer, the U.S. civilian administrator of Iraq, said today it's important to capture or kill Saddam Hussein. He said as long as the former Iraqi leader's fate is unknown, his supporters will continue to attack U.S. and British forces. NPR's Guy Raz is in Baghdad. He says the attacks have been an almost daily occurrence.
In the past 6 days alone, 5 U.S. military personnel have been killed. There's been another attack today. 2 soldiers were injured when their convoy came under attack. It was hit by an explosive device. At least 1 Iraqi civilian who was traveling in that convoy was killed, and the soldiers were then airlifted to a medical facility where they're now undergoing treatment.
NPR's Guy Raz in Baghdad. U.S. forces launched an operation today in Iraq in an effort to capture insurgents who've been attacking U.S. troops and seize illegal weapons. The U.S. Central Command issued a statement saying that more than 20 simultaneous raids have been conducted and more than 60 people have been detained. A third-floor porch on an apartment building collapsed early this morning during a party in Chicago. 12 people died and as many as 45 were injured. Larry Langford, director of media affairs for the city, says the tragedy occurred in the Wrigleyville neighborhood.
We had people partying on some balconies in a 3-story building. The third-floor balcony, which was loaded with people, gave way, crashed down to the second-floor balcony, and that in turn crashed the first floor. That then went into a basement stairwell. About 50 people in total were on the balconies.
Langford says the porch may have been overloaded. NASA will try again tonight to launch a space rover on a mission to Mars. The launch was postponed last night because of strong winds. NASA says data from a weather balloon showed there was wind shear at a high altitude. The rover is scheduled to be launched tonight. This is NPR News. Today is Gay Pride Day, with parades and other festivities planned in many cities across the country. Many gay men and lesbians say they have a particular reason to celebrate following last week's Supreme Court decision striking down laws that ban homosexual sex. In Canada, gay men and lesbians are celebrating a recent Ontario court ruling. The ruling could pave the way for legislation recognizing same-sex marriages in Canada. Canada's troubled national airline faces a key vote this weekend. Air Canada pilots are voting on a restructuring plan that could determine the airline's fate. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
Many of Air Canada's more than 3,000 pilots were angry as they began to vote this weekend, and that anger could derail the air carrier's plans to restructure under bankruptcy protection. The pilots are upset over an arbitrator's ruling concerning pilots who used to work for rival Canadian airlines before it was taken over by Air Canada. The arbitrator said the former Canadian Airlines pilots should get increased seniority. Late last week, the Canada Industrial Relations Board said it would review the contentious ruling. Nevertheless, it left many pilots bitter. Air Canada has said it wants to have cost-cutting agreements with all of its 11 unions by Monday. 10 have accepted. The pilots' union is the only one still to ratify the deal. Union leaders are urging the members to vote yes, but they say there are no guarantees and expect the vote to be close. For NPR News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk in Toronto.
North and South Korea held another round of family reunions today. It was the seventh reunion since an inter-Korean summit in 2000. Another round of reunions starts tomorrow. 475 South Koreans are expected to travel to the North. I'm Nancy Marshall, NPR News, in Washington.
The NPR Shop introduces I Heard It on NPR, At Home in the World, a compilation of world music by artists featured on NPR programs at npr.org.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host and the participants.
Greetings. Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, today on June 29th. 2003 here in WILL AM 580 in beautiful Urbana, Illinois. Today we've got a terrific show for you. Our guest is going to be Amy Goodman, the executive producer and host of Democracy Now!, the national listener-sponsored public radio and TV, mostly radio, News Hour, which is really a huge community radio collaboration. It's on over 120 stations, including the five Pacifica stations, and locally on WEFT from 4 to 5. Every day you can hear Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! Amy Goodman has been awarded numerous accolades for her work, including the 1988 George Polk Award for her radio documentary, Drilling and Killing, Chevron and Nigeria's Oil Dictatorship. And in 2003, just this year, she received the Electronic Frontier Foundation Pioneer Award. In addition to her radio shows, Amy Goodman speaks around the country on a number of issues on university campuses, as well as to human rights, church, and community groups about a number of issues, civil liberties, politics, media activism, the nature of media. Welcome to our show today, Amy Goodman.
It's great to be with you, Bob.
You know, we've had a lot of people, Amy, who've wanted you to be a guest on the show since I've done it now for a little over a year, and I've never wanted to necessarily ask you because I know how hard you work Monday through Friday, and I just feel guilty to go to someone on a weekend. So it's really an honor that you take time out of your very scarce free time to join us.
It's a privilege to be on with you, Bob, for all the work that you have done around the issue of democratic media and most recently, of course, around the issue of the FCC and letting people know around the country what was being done behind their backs. I actually have just come from 2 days at the National Association of Hispanic Journalists Conference that's here in New York. My co-host on Democracy Now!, Juan Gonzalez, is the president of the NAHJ. 2,000 Latino reporters, publishers, editors gathered just down the street to talk about all of these issues and really to fight them out, I have to say. They had everyone from the head of the Tribune Company, very much for media deregulation, to Latino publishers, broadcasters who understand very well the threat that media consolidation means to the voices of people of color in this country.
You know, one of the things when people say to me, well, you know, what do you mean? What's wrong with our media system? What are some of the problems with it? And one of the arguments I make is that, you know, there's not a tremendous amount of diversity ideologically in terms of content, in terms of perspectives. In Exhibit A, I invariably point to say, listen to a program like Democracy Now!, like the journalism that Amy Goodman and her colleagues are doing at Democracy Now! For, you know, a perspective that's largely absent from conventional journalism in this country.
That's right. And, you know, Democracy Now! Should not be so unusual. I think we simply abide by the principles of good journalism, sort of journalism 101, which is take an issue and find the people closest to the story, most affected by that story. And that, every single day, hammering away, means you start to hear the voices of the marginalized, of those who are very deeply involved at the local level in their communities, but have been iced out of a media whose the voices on that mainstream media that we hear are the voices of a minority elite, and I don't mean people of color, but a small group of people who continually, you know, the pundits we see on CNN, NBC, ABC, who know so little about so much.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's the motto for Democracy Now? Is exception to the rulers? Is that right?
That's right.
You know, why don't you explain that to our listeners, what you mean by exception to the rulers?
Well, the idea that we are here to hold those in power accountable, because so much power is invested in so few, and it is very important to be there, to be a watchdog. And I think that's what the finest in, you know, in reporting and journalism is all about, and trying to live up to that standard on a daily basis. You were talking about the public media collaboration we're engaged in. We're really building a network around the country that's not exclusive to radio, TV, or the internet, but includes all of them. We started with Pacifica Radio, and for those who are not familiar with Pacifica, it was founded in 1949 out of the ashes of World War II by war resistors, one man in particular named Lou Hill, who was held in a detention camp during the war. And when he came out, he said, there has to be a media outlet that's not run by the corporations that profit from war, but run by journalists and artists, not run as George Gerbner, who is the former head of the University of Pennsylvania Journalism School, says, not run by corporations that have nothing to tell and everything to sell, that are raising our children today. So that's how Pacifica was born. We grew to five stations around the country, in the Bay Area, KPFA, in Los Angeles in 1959-60, that's KPFK, in New York, where I come from, WBAI, in Washington, WPFW, and in Houston, KPFT went on the air in 1970. And when it first went on the air in its first year of operation, KPFT in Houston, it was blown up by the Ku Klux Klan. I think it's because they understood how dangerous Pacifica was, how dangerous its mission of giving voice to the voiceless, of hearing the experience of people who are usually marginalized. Because when you hear someone speaking for themselves, I think it breaks down caricatures and stereotypes that fuel hate groups like the KKK. And that's really been the philosophy of Pacifica for its 54-year tradition. People like Paul Robeson knew when he was whitelisted all over this country, you know, absolutely his voice could not be heard except in a few black churches. He knew he could come to KPFA in Berkeley, and he would be heard. His singing voice, his analysis, everything. James Baldwin could debate Malcolm X. And it's that kind of tradition, the idea of giving voice to the voiceless and holding those in power accountable, that Democracy Now! Carries the tradition on to now beyond radio. We're actually now broadcasting on more than 150 stations. We started with radio, and that's the meat of it. It's always the closest to my heart, radio.
And mostly then, community stations, Amy?
Sorry?
Mostly community stations?
Yeah, it's community radio stations, Pacifica affiliates, Pacifica stations, and increasingly NPR stations all over the country. People are tired of hearing the same old thing, and they want something different. You know, it's interesting about NPR stations in that, unlike Pacifica, which owns five stations, there isn't a central NPR that owns NPR stations. They are community, university, different kinds of stations have different kind of ownership, and they take NPR programming. But they can also take any independent programming, and that's what's exciting. And I think that's why more and more stations are taking us, is the idea of a commitment to bringing out that full diversity of voices. And it really, I would say, I hesitate to use the word exploded, but exploded during, we expanded to 2 hours during the invasion of Iraq, and it was called the War, Democracy Now!'s War and Peace Report. We're back to one daily hour now, Monday through Friday. But anyone can take us, and not only on radio, but also on public access TV. And we are building a network of stations all over the country. Often people don't even realize they have a public access TV channel, and it's where people can make their own media. and it's right in the thick of the commercial, you know, stations, like on, in Baltimore, we're on Channel 5. That's there with NBC, CBS, ABC. We're twice a day, and it's the TV Democracy Now, which is the same as the radio show, but there are graphics, there are, you can see the people who are speaking. But information is at the heart of it, and we're also on a nonprofit 24-hour TV channel on Dish Network, which is called Free Speech TV. It is based in Boulder, Colorado, and we broadcast there now four times a day. And then we video and audio stream at democracynow.org.
And Amy, I think you're on channel 9,415.
That's right.
So for those of
on,
you who,
Dish Network.
If you're channel surfing, you know, get out there to 9,400 range and you can't miss it. We're talking to Amy Goodman today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. If you'd like to call in and ask Amy Goodman a question or have a comment, the number here is 333-9455. The toll-free number from around the state and country, 1-800-222-9455. The lines are open. I urge you to call in and ask Amy some questions if you have any. Now, as you said, it's really boomed. You're up to 200 stations altogether. How big a staff do you have to work on? I mean, it's a lot of work to put out a full hour of original journalism. I mean, you don't have any commercial breaks either. It's not like you don't have 15 minutes of ads to fill
out
the hour.
Right. Well, we don't pretend to have that slogan, you know, give us 22 minutes, we'll give you the world. But every day we comb the newspapers, we fan out on the internet, we talk to lots of people, we get lots of email, we cover the different areas. We have, in the morning, we have a crew of about 20 because we've got all of the videographers putting out the TV show. We've got the producers, and the producers are really reporters. I mean, it's going through the stories, getting as close to the story as possible, talking to someone that connects us to someone else, finding the person most affected by that story, and also getting the debates, having not the idea of the debate you see in the networks, which is often the Democrat versus the Republican, and the centrist Democrat at that, if not very conservative Democrat. Now, I think all of these points of view are valid, but I also think that we need true debate. And it's also why people are tuning away from network news and tuning away from the networks, because they are not providing that real debate that is happening all over this country. Before the U.S. invaded Iraq, the majority of people were opposed to that invasion. I mean, in the rest of the world, you had in Europe 80-90%. And it's not that the United States is that different, but FAIR did a study, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, in the week leading up to General Colin Powell, the Secretary of State, going to the UN and making his case for war, and the week afterwards. So you have, let's say, half the people opposed to an invasion. FAIR looked at the four major nightly newscasts, ABC, NBC, CBS, and interestingly, PBS, the NewsHour with Jim Lehrer.
Mm-hmm.
In that two-week time, there were 393 interviews done. Three were done with people who are opposed to war. Three of almost 400. Now, that does not reflect the views of the people in this country. And what's amazing to me is that even with that unbelievably skewed pro-war cheerleading on the part of the networks day after day, you still had a considerable segment of society that was opposed to that invasion.
We're talking to Amy Goodman today in Media Matters. As I said, we can, if you'd like to call in and speak with Amy, the number is 333-9455, toll-free 1-800-222-9455. Amy Goodman is the executive producer of Democracy Now!, the radio show that's carried nationally on some 200 radio and television stations, and locally on WEFT, our community station here at 90.1 FM every day from 4 to 5. Let's go to the phone lines now. We have a caller. Line one, Urbana, you're on the air with Amy Goodman.
Yeah, Amy's really wonderful. Your program's terrific. And but I actually have a complaint and or a question, perhaps, and a comment. And last time I was on your website, somebody had changed it around, and instead of having these little paragraphs summarizing what each archived news program was about, instead they just had what looked like everybody's name and their and their titles and where they're from and that kind of thing. Hmm. And
well, I'm not sure what you're looking at, but it's true that we have a revamped website, but actually I think it gives you much more information. What we do now at democracynow.org, by the way, we are really, I think, pioneering open source software, which is free to everyone, non-proprietary programming language that is the backbone of our website. And you click on any segment of the show, which is on the homepage. Now there's just a couple of lines that brings you the sort of headline of that day. And then you click on it, and it's an extensive either news report about the show that we had, or just summarizing what is about to come on. And then you can click on that and listen to the segment. But we've actually expanded the print version of each segment, really getting involved with what the content of that segment is.
Well, I have to give you the benefit of the doubt, because I've been kind of busy lately, and I probably misinterpreted what I was looking at. But the other thing is that, by the way, that website, just having those archived shows are really terrific, because you can't always listen. You're on WEFT here, and I can't always listen between 4 and 5 in the afternoon, and it's just great to get to have that archived shows there.
Well, thank you very much. Like, I'm looking right now at our website because I wanted to see if, you know, what I could understand from what you're saying. And it's the headlines from Friday. Supreme Court strikes down all bans on sodomy and gay sex. Largest victory ever for gay and lesbian civil rights in the United States. And then you click on that, and it's a full in-depth story about, you know, sharing the analysis and what it means, what this decision was based on, which is the issue, which is very interesting, by the way, that is not picked up very much, of privacy, which further enshrines Roe v. Wade as well, and also goes way beyond the issue of gay sex, because the criminalizing of sodomy in this country, the criminalizing of gay sex in this country, has meant well beyond sex. It means that a mother can be denied custody for her child if she's a lesbian because they say, well, if you're a criminal, we are not going to give you your child. They can be fired from jobs because they say, well, if you engage in criminal activity, we have a right to fire you. And that's what we explored on Friday. But the other thing that we've done is we're trying as much as possible to give you a transcript of the program, and we're doing that now on a regular basis. And just in the last few weeks, we are very excited to announce that we have closed captioning on the TV program, working with the National Captioning Institute. It means that, and Public Access TV has rarely done this, it means that on every station, which is around 75, 80 stations around the country, and on Free Speech TV, the show can be read. So for people who are hard of hearing, people who are first learning English, kids who are learning to read and write, people in noisy places can also have access to, in a sense, Pacifica Radio. So Pacifica, which our slogan has been Radio with Vision, is now for the deaf, for the hard of hearing, and it is very, very exciting. We got an email from a deaf man who said, for years I've wanted to listen to Pacifica Radio, and finally I can. So we are very excited about being able to broaden out our audience to, it's roughly 28 million Americans who have a hard time just listening in English, and now they can read the show as well as they watch it.
Yeah, I don't doubt that would include a lot of English as a second language people, too.
Yes, right.
But I just wanted to put this bug in your ear that I hope, I don't know, I haven't checked lately, but I don't know if you've done a show on electronic voting, but I really hope you take that issue up.
What do you mean by electronic voting?
The idea that there can be just terminals at a polling place and that it all goes into a central computer and then up pops the tally without any kind of paper trail, without any kind of, like you say, open source, the open source on the underlying program, that kind of thing, because there's been a lot of talk about it, but I haven't seen it on the, quote, liberal, unquote, programs really handled very well. There was this, I watch C-SPAN, and I watch watched that Hispanic news thing this weekend. But there was also on C-SPAN this I kind of lost my trail of thought here. But at any rate, what I'm getting at is that this whole thing about Congress had passed this law about help the I forget what it's actually titled, but help the Voter Act, and they're using computers all over the country. But the truth is that anybody who's ever done any kind of auditing knows that you do not set up a system where at one little point everything could be changed and there's no way to know that the tallies that are popping out on the numbers that are popping out in these elections are completely bogus. And like I know what I was getting at. One of the things I saw on C-SPAN was this lady testifying in front of Congress, and she was very much against, and right now her name isn't popping into my head, but she was very much against this kind of computerization at the present state of the art, because of the danger of manipulating the numbers. And she had a couple articles on that she popped up in various places. But I've done a LexisNexis search on her. She had a doctorate in something or other, and I did a LexisNexis search on her ever since then, and she just dropped off the face of the earth. I mean, she had an organization set up to it. I think it was called Voter Integrity Project, something like that.
Caller, I think I'm going to let Amy chip in here and take over now. Have you followed this story at all, Amy?
I haven't, but I'm interested. So
yeah, I've heard a lot about it. I mean, there's been a lot on the internet in the background, and I think coming out of the Florida 2000 election, an increasing awareness that, you know, the person who counts the votes is oftentimes more important than the person who casts the votes, the way things go.
That's so right.
Not always guaranteed. We're talking to Amy Goodman today. We lost a caller who I think lost their patience while the last few minutes. Please call back if you will. The number here, 333-9455. The toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Our guest today, Amy Goodman. While I've got you, let me say that our guest for the next few weeks, a week from today, we'll have Jim Weinstein, the founder of In These Times, talking about his new book, The Long Detour. 2 weeks from today, Saul Landau, expert on Latin American politics. 3 weeks from today, we'll have the editor of The Nation magazine, Katrina Vandenhoevel. And then 4 weeks from today, the editor and founder of Adbusters magazine, Kelly Lassen. So that's the lineup for the next 4 weeks of Media Matters. Please be sure to join us. But today, we're very fortunate to have as our guest Amy Goodman, the executive producer and host of Democracy Now! And Amy, we do have a caller. Let's go to the lines now. Line 4, you're on the air with Amy Goodman.
Hi.
Hi, go right ahead.
Yes, I wanted to follow up on the previous speaker's comment that he couldn't always listen to Amy on WEFT at 4 o'clock. And I've been thinking for a long time that we ought to have Amy Goodman on WILL at a time when working people can listen to her and other progressive news programs on WILL. So I was wondering if other people think so, maybe they want to start a campaign, call in the station or write letters or petitions or that kind of thing to try to get some of these programs on WILL. And I want to thank Amy so much for all the good work she's doing. Thanks.
Well, thanks so much. And so often it's listeners who are the ones who alert a station to the program. And I think stations appreciate that because they're always looking to respond to listener input. We actually produce the show every morning, 8 to 9 Eastern Standard Time. And then stations can take us either live or any time during the day. I guess that's your time, 7 in the morning, because if, for example, in places like Washington, D.C., for federal workers, it's very hard for them to get the show at 9, so we wanted to be able to get to them in drive time. So it's, you know, it very much is available to stations 24 hours a day.
All right, Amy, let's go back to the phone lines again. Line 2, Chicago, you're on the air with Amy Goodman.
Hi, Amy and Bob. Great talking with you. A couple of things to share, and then I have a question for Amy. For Chicago listeners out there, it turns out that Democracy Now! Is airing on Chicago airwaves again. WZRD 88.3 FM is airing Democracy Now! 7 a.m. weekdays, so Chicago listeners can listen to Amy every day.
We're getting it live then, too.
Yeah, getting it live.
That's fantastic. It's thrilling to hear. And that's pretty much in northern Chicago, is that right?
I'm afraid so. The signal for ZRD, I understand, is not that strong. It only gets the north side.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a start. I think someone had commented regarding black box voting, you know, voting.
Yes.
That would be all right. There's a website, I think it's called blackboxvoting.org. It's this portal that collects all kinds of information with regards to possible malfeasances having to do with use of computers for voting purposes. And it might be a resource that you might want to use to check out.
Okay, good. Blackbox.org.
Thank you very much, Colin.
One question to share.
Okay.
Amy had touched briefly on the disconnect that there was between what the size of opposition against the war in Iraq, something like rates of maybe half in the United States, versus like if you were to look at like this FAIR study, 3 divided by 393 is not even 1%.
That's right.
And
you know, it hasn't changed since the Persian Gulf War. During the Persian Gulf War, in the 6 months leading up to the attack on Iraq, less than 1% of the voices in the mainstream media, this was another study done by FAIR back mm-hmm. in 1990, 1991,
mm-hmm.
Less than 1% of those voices were voices of peace, voices opposed to war.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what happens is people around the country increasingly just feel alienated from the media, start to wonder, you know, who it is that they're interviewing and why it doesn't represent their reality or those of their friends. And I think two things. One is we have to challenge the mainstream media because they, like us, are using the public airwaves, and they have a responsibility to present that diversity of views that makes up America. And two, we have to build our own media. We have to strengthen community radio stations all over the country, as well as public access TV, and make sure that there is a media that reflects all of the different voices, not to mention the fact that that commercial media, like Fox, like NBC, ABC, CBS, in other words, Viacom, General Electric, Rupert Murdoch, they are the most powerful entities that are projecting our image to the rest of the world. And that image is being projected through a corporate lens, and that has to be challenged. And we see how dangerous that is after September 11th.
We're talking to Amy Goodman today in Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Let's go back to the phone lines. Line 1, Urbana, you're on the air with Amy Goodman.
Hello, Amy. My name is
Hi.
Matt. Is this me?
It's you. You're on.
Okay. You know, this is not a real analytic question, but I've been listening to your show pretty much since September 11th from 4 to 5 here on WEFT in Urbana. And, you know, it's just been a great source of information. I can't tell you how much it's meant to me to be able to get that kind of information. But the sort of question I had for you was, in these times, which to me sometimes the news is just so downright depressing or scary or unsettling, you seem to just keep up this spirit of both good-natured and hopeful resistance. And I just kind of wonder how you recharge yourself, how you keep doing that. So.
Well, I think it's traveling around the country and the world and seeing, in fact, how hopeful people are. Last weekend, for example, I was in Winnipeg, Canada, for the national meeting of the National Campus and College Radio Association. And this is community radio throughout Canada. And they are building a network. In fact, right now, a Native American network, an Indigenous network, is coalescing around Canada. Then a few days ago, I was in Santa Fe, New Mexico, to do a public interview with Cornel West. Within 10 minutes of the tickets going on sale for Cornel West's interview, you know, the great academic and philosopher, African-American studies and theology professor now at Princeton, within 10 minutes of the tickets going on sale, they were sold out at a 1,000-person theater in Santa Fe. And why I raise that is that there is such a groundswell of interest in what I guess in this country is dissent. And that's ultimately our goal, is to make dissent commonplace in this country, which will protect people. With the increasing crackdown, particularly on South Asian populations, on Muslim Americans, Arabs, Arab Americans, it is so important to make dissent commonplace, for all of us to stand up, and it makes it much harder to target individuals. Actually, yesterday I was on a panel here in New York at the National Association of Hispanic Journalists on civil rights here at home. And with me on the panel was a representative of it's called DHS. Get used to it, folks. That's the Department of Homeland Security. And they're raising those issues of, if you are concerned about reducing terrorism, when you arrest hundreds of people around this country, and none of them are charged with terrorism, but they are held for up to a year or more, you are angering the very populations you want to be able to speak to the government to talk about if there's unusual activity or whatever. And when they pointed out that the 19 hijackers were Muslim and Arab, I said, well, if that's what you're going to use as the reason to incarcerate so many, why didn't, after Timothy McVeigh blew up the Oklahoma building, didn't we, in this country, the government, round up blonde-haired, blue-eyed Americans? And I think the reason is because that would not have helped in any way. And the same goes for now. A terrible crime against humanity was committed, and good law enforcement practices do not include massive sweeps of populations. You only alienate them, antagonize them, and shut them down from ever communicating with the government.
We're talking to Amy Goodman of Media Matters today. Amy Goodman's the executive producer and host of Democracy Now!, the nationwide syndicated news daily news program carried locally on WEFT from 4 to 5 every day. If you'd like to call in and make a comment or question for Amy, the number is 333-9455. Our toll-free number, and the toll-free line is open, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go back to the phone lines. Line 3, Urbana, you're on the air with Amy Goodman.
Oh, yes. I'm a little bit involved with the local independent media center here, and we do have an independent news program for local folks. It's called the IMC Radio News, Mondays on WEFT at 5:30. But my question is, thanks to the hard work of Clint, our coordinator, he's put together and helped put together a really good show, but certainly we could use more help and volunteers and stuff like that.
Is this what we call an advertisement?
Huh?
No, go ahead.
Well, you got to put your plugs in where you can.
Yeah, I've noticed.
My question is real because she's grown Democracy Now!, or Amy's grown Democracy Now! Into something incredible, and I was wondering what tips she could give us to help us.
Well, first of all, I applaud you for doing a news show, and I also want to really talk about the independent media movement, the IMC movement, indiemedia.org, because it has been a lesson for everyone. It really first blossomed at the Battle of Seattle. We were all there, people around the country, and as this global uprising against corporate power took place with 50,000 people in the streets of Seattle protesting the World Trade Organization, that supranational, really secret organization that was founded in Geneva in 1995, this massive protest in the street was led by high school and college students, union activists, as well as environmentalists, public health officials, farmers, and people realized very early on that if this uprising against corporate power was going to be honestly reported, it could not be seen through a corporate lens. And so people gathered with their pens and papers and tape recorders and video cameras, and when they would get tear gassed or arrested, they would hand them on to someone else. And those stories and images and video got on the indiemedia.org website, constantly being updated. And soon, people around the world were turning to that as the main source of news. And it got more hits than CNN.com. And this was a huge lesson to people, that people could tell the story from the grassroots, from the voices of the people that are doing the protesting, not those in power just critiquing them. And I think there's a place for all. But certainly what has been left out is those people who are leading those protests. And that led to indie media centers being set up all over this country, all over the world, from Prague to South Africa to the occupied territories to Israel. It has been absolutely amazing. And I have to say that very much indie media folks feed Democracy Now. We've been broadcasting during the invasion from Iraq with Jeremy Scahill, our correspondent, and Jackie Suin, who is one of the major forces with indie media. And they were sending us these TV broadcast stories over the internet. And that's why we can take on the national networks. It used to be that, you know, satellite technology costs millions of dollars. There's no way we could compete with the breaking news stories from overseas or wherever. Now we can, with appropriate technology. We are globalizing too, but not corporate globalizing. And that is the difference. This is grassroots globalization at its finest, and indie media is an absolute essential part of that. So congratulations, because it's very important to go to work on the internet, but to go beyond and to have, you know, at KPFT in Houston, Pacifica Station, they too, the Indie Media Center, is producing the news. And so you're reaching out to a new medium, and that reaches a whole broad spectrum of folks on the radio.
Got any advice for us on how to continue to grow this movement?
Well, I think that when you're on the radio, other people know that there is space for that kind of grassroots reporting, and you should always encourage people to come. What's so beautiful about community radio stations is that you're training people in the community to cover themselves. And we have to, and I think Bob has been a major voice in this, we have to make our own media. Yes, it's absolutely essential to critique the mainstream media, but we have to show that there is a responsible, comprehensive alternative, and that is independent media. So in your newscast, you let people know that they can come and they can train to do the newscast, and just keep on going. You know, just do your newscast, because that's what's going to break the sound barrier of the corporate media.
All right, thank you very much, caller. You know, Amy, before we go to our next caller, I wanted just to ask you a little bit about the war coverage, because I think Democracy Now! Has distinguished itself with extensive coverage and independent coverage of the war. What would you say the stories that have been missed in the mainstream coverage? What are the crucial aspects of what's going on in the invasion and occupation of Iraq that most Americans, if they were just watching NBC and CBS and reading their local daily newspaper, wouldn't be hearing about or knowing about?
Well, I think what we're seeing now could be predicted. You know, the whole resistance inside Iraq. This is not a resistance for the military tyrant and thug, Saddam Hussein. This is a resistance of people who are tired of being dictated to. On the one hand, sure, there is relief that Saddam Hussein isn't there. But what is the U.S. intentions? And unfortunately, the U.S. moved in, the U.S. military, and they very much exposed themselves by quickly moving to protect the Ministry of Oil and the oil refineries. Yet what about the people? What about the hospitals? What about the finest, you know, museums of the artifacts of all civilization in Mesopotamia, right, Iraq? No, they didn't protect those. And that is what the Iraqi people had always feared. And for us and the media, it has been an unbelievable example of how the government controls the press. The whole issue of embedding at the National Association of Hispanic Journalists, they had one workshop on embedded versus embed. And that is a very serious question. Now, you might say, how else would we have gotten the on-the-scenes frontline reporting of reporters, but right there together with the military? Okay, but then what about having reporters embedded with an Iraqi family? What about having reporters embedded in the peace movement? I mean, you have to have different pictures, what it means to be at the target end of those weapons that the U.S. reporters were embedded with. The model that has been set up is very frightening. Michael Moore was in New York. He gave a big speech to WBAI listeners right after he won the Oscars, the great filmmaker who won for Bowling for Columbine. And he said, I call on the withdrawal of all troops from NBC, CBS, and ABC. I mean, think about what we saw. On CNN, you had General Wesley Clark, right? And you would have him. He was a paid consultant. Did they have a paid peace activist that could continually give commentary? Someone like, well, Cornel West or Noam Chomsky? No, of course not. And you then would have General Wesley Clark in the studio, and he would be questioning one of the embedded reporters. And he would say, you know, what's happening on the scene, and what do you see there? And the reporter would be saying, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, sir. And then you have NBC, MSNBC, not just Fox, all of those networks, naming their coverage the same name that the Pentagon gave the invasion. That was Operation Iraqi Freedom. And that name was embedded in the logo of these networks. Now, when you have something like that, what makes the media any different from state media? I mean, that's the serious question we have to ask today. It might have been more interesting if the Pentagon had stuck with its original name for the invasion. I don't know if people know it, but at counterpunch.org, Alexander Coburn reported this. The original name was supposed to be Operation Iraqi Liberation, but they threw that out when they realized the acronym, O-I-L, oil. but anyway, we have to ask that question. If there were state media in this country, how would it be any different?
Yeah, in fact, ironically, Amy, currently in Britain, where the Blair government supported the war, was the ally of the United States in the war, the media is giving, as far as I can tell, the Blair administration a much harder time.
Oh, yeah.
Than the U.S.'s media is giving, specifically on the same facts. I mean, it's the same facts they're dealing with, which is whether the government was being honest and candid about the weapons of mass destruction and intelligence reports prior to the decision to go to war, whether it lied to generate popular support. And along those lines, specifically, the BBC, the government, the public broadcaster in Britain, is getting chewed out for being too independent from the government.
Well, in this same panel at the NAHJ conference were the heads of BBC, CBC, Univision. It was a very interesting discussion, and the BBC guy immediately read that headline, which is the Blair government is fiercely attacking the BBC right now. Right after the invasion, the head of BBC came out with a fierce critique of the U.S. media. Talking about the kind of cheerleading for war. Now, this is a story that will now be getting beyond the room of this workshop for the first time, telling it on WILL on your show.
That's right.
But there was a cameraman there from CNN who said to the BBC chief, you know, the BBC exposed the big story of Jessica Lynch, right, saying that it was a myth, that not that she isn't a young, brave woman, but that the military did not free her from Iraqi military control at that hospital, that the hospital was taking as good care as they could of her, and they were letting the U.S. military know that she was there. Then the Pentagon tried to deal with this by saying that Jessica Lynch had amnesia. She could not tell the story. Then, amazingly enough, I saw her father on the air saying, Jessica can remember everything. But anyway, the Jessica Lynch story was exposed on BBC. In fact, Democracy Now! Had exposed it well before that. And it's not like we had done the research ourselves. We simply put the voice on of reporters from The Independent and Observer, well before the BBC, who had been to the hospital, and they told that very story, that the administrators were completely befuddled. Why did the U.S. military come in with force the way they did when they were calling on the military to take Jessica Lynch out? But anyway, the CNN guy said, we broke the story, meaning CNN. He said, I went in with a reporter, and we talked to the hospital administrator. This was, he said, 2 weeks before BBC broke the story. And we did this story, but it was basically hidden. He said that he knew that it had been on CNN International. He wasn't sure if CNN National actually ran the story. And you run it a few times, and that was the end of it. he wasn't so much going after BBC saying, don't take credit. He was really going after his own institution saying, you know, what when someone breaks a story, it's not just about breaking it. It's about how your network pumps it up. That CNN basically buried it. And it goes to a very interesting phenomenon with CNN. You know that it runs both CNN Domestic and CNN International. And these two networks that are the same at CNN ran entirely different coverage of the invasion of Iraq. When you had Saddam Hussein's statue falling over and over again on CNN Domestic, on CNN International, and the Wall Street Journal even wrote about this, throughout that day, yes, they showed the statue falling over and over again, but it was a split screen, and on the other side of that screen were the pictures of casualties of war. And that's the biggest omission, if you will, that's putting it nicely, of the U.S. media, is that they do not show those casualties to the extent that they were, you know, well more casualty, thousands more than died in September 11th. And I don't know what Iraq had to do with September 11th, but anyway, it's the pictures of casualty that show the gore of war. But CNN International knew that their audience would not buy the complete whitewashing of war, making it look like a video game, you know, with playing cards and all, not to mention the grainy pictures with the targets on them, but you never saw that those targets were people. But CNN Domestic never showed those casualties, or rarely did. And we had an hour on Democracy Now! With Aaron Brown of CNN and asked him why. Why aren't they showing these pictures? And he said, well, they're tasteless. Wait a second. War is tasteless. Who is he to decide that people won't see the real images of war?
We're talking to Amy Goodman today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Amy is the executive producer and host of Democracy Now!, the nationally syndicated hour-long radio and television news hour, which can be heard locally on WEFT from 4 to 5 every day. And let's go back to the phone lines for a very patient caller. Line 1, Champagne, you're on the air with Amy Goodman.
Hi. I'm wondering if you can talk about media and imperialism. I mean, you've talked about that in a way. I'm thinking of this article by Kaplan. I don't know if you've read it in the Atlantic Monthly, that is both ludicrous and very, very scary about supremacy with stealth, 10 ways to manage the world, and he disses the media as being dangerous. He's not interested in a media with a society with a free media. But in terms of, and he also has this, you know, complete fascination with Roman colonialism and imperialism, and it's, well, it's very funny, but very sad. But the problem is, it seems that the Iraqis have known something about imperialism from the Persians, from the Greeks, from the Romans, from the Byzantines, from the Muslims, the Ottomans, Muslims, the British. So it seems that the Iraqis know more about imperialism than Americans do. So, you know, what is the position of the media vis-a-vis American imperialism? How does it affect your media, for example?
Well, I think that empire, the picture of empire, is very different from when you observe it inside or you are the victim of it outside. And even in this country, we are not certainly a monolith. There are many different populations who've been victim, in a sense, of empire right here at home. But that is why we have a very different picture of the war here at home than other people see in their media around the world. Other people very much saw it. I mean, one of the producers of Democracy Now!, Maria Carrion, is now back in her home country of Spain. And she said overwhelmingly, I mean, 90% of people were opposed to war there. And it was just it was amazing to just walk in the streets in the days of protest. Millions of people would be out. And they very much saw it in that way. Then you have those that dare to report a different story in Iraq, the unembedded reporters at the Palestine Hotel in Baghdad, right? Hundreds of reporters packed in like sardines, and then the U.S. military goes and shells the hotel, and they kill two reporters, three reporters, one a Ukrainian cameraman and two Spanish reporters. Cameraman, and then Tarek Ayoub, the Al Jazeera reporter, was killed in his office when the U.S. military bombed it. They also bombed Al Jazeera in Afghanistan. And I think a very significant message was sent to the media about unembedded reporters. about people who are reporting independently. And you contrast the reaction here, where I was going from network to network, and you would have, you know, a comment on the fact that they had bombed the hotel or they had shelled the hotel. And then they would turn to the Pentagon and ask them a question. Of course, the Pentagon would say they knew nothing about it. They didn't know that there were reporters there. And then you see the reaction in a place like Spain, where the reporters from the elite journalists to the people who laid the cables on the ground and the parliament, the media workers, did a one-day strike in the parliament. And when the prime minister, Aznar, came in, they put down their pens, their pencils, their cameras, their all of their recording equipment, and turned their backs and said, "We will not record the voices of the powerful when this is what they do." Aznar had supported Bush in the invasion of Iraq. And then the journalists, hundreds of them, marched outside to the U.S. Embassy. They stopped traffic in the intersection, and they chanted, "Murderer, murderer." It is a very different approach, and the media outside of this country is very different than the media inside. But I think that's only inspiration for us to take back the media in this country.
We're talking to Amy Goodman today on Media Matters. Do you have any follow-up on that, caller?
Well, I was just wondering if she could, if she can better explain the ideology behind someone like Kaplan as a neoconservative in terms of either world domination or economic domination, you know, what his connection is with...
Amy, are you familiar with this piece?
Unfortunately, I'm not familiar with the piece, but I thank you for calling it to my attention. And yeah,
it's gotten quite a bit of acclaim and write-up. I haven't seen the piece either, but I've seen reference to it. It's one of the whole new genre of pieces that have come along in the last two or three years, which say, yes, United States is an empire, that what the critics have said about us the last 30 years is true, but that's not a bad thing. That's actually a really good thing. We should be proud to be an empire and take responsibility for running the world in our interest.
When you say acclaim, has it also gotten quite a bit of criticism? It seems like that would be due.
Yeah, I think it's gotten criticism too. That's right. Attention would be a better word than acclaim.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, caller. You know, we've only got a couple of minutes left, Amy. There's an issue I've been wanting to talk about we haven't gotten to yet, which is an area that Democracy Now! Has been singularly attentive to, which is the Middle East and Palestine, an issue which how would you characterize the coverage of the Middle East and the balance of the news media?
Well, it is so rare to get pictures on the ground and give voice to the Palestinians. I speak here as a journalist, as a Jewish journalist, as the granddaughter of an Orthodox rabbi who spent time when I was little in Israel, and understand well that when people critique a military government like we see in Israel right now, that it has nothing to do with anti-Semitism. I mean, I spent a long time covering Indonesia and its occupation of Timor. Indonesia happens to be the largest Muslim country in the world. But critiquing that military dictatorship was not critiquing Islam. And in the same way, critiquing the Israeli government is not critiquing Judaism. And I just think it's very important that reporters honestly report what is happening on the ground. And I think that if the lives of Palestinians were taken as seriously as the lives of Israelis, there would be a lot fewer Israeli deaths as well as Palestinian deaths. I was just speaking to someone at Dow Jones Newswire who was saying that when the wire's stories come over from the Middle East, you'll get one story per Israeli killed. And that's appropriate, by the way, because any death as a result, any death should be reported. But when Palestinians die, you might get a story covering four Palestinians or covering 20 or covering 100. It is absolutely critical that we value each life equally. Let's just use the basic rules of good journalism. In the same way that the New York Times has the portraits of grief, all of those who died on September 11th, which are very important and beautiful that we could come to know the people who died, we should pay that same attention to the Palestinians who have died. And people, Americans, like Rachel Corrie, I just spoke at the Evergreen State College graduation.
My alma mater, I might add.
Really?
Yeah, but Amy, you know, on that note, unfortunately, I hear the band tuning up in the background, which means they're about to throw us out of the studio and take over. I want to thank Amy Goodman for being our guest today on Media Matters. You can hear her program, Democracy Now!, and locally on WEFT every day from 4 to 5. Thanks again very much, Amy. And I'll join
you
all 167 hours from now. Goodbye.